You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today, I'll be kicking off my series of exit interviews for each player from last season, something we've done on the show for a number of years now. We'll go through the pros and cons of their individual performance, break down their salary issues and tradability, and pose some questions as if we were Pat Riley in the Heat front office. I'll be having some guests on the show to help me with the whole process. And on today's show, I'm honored to have with me Mr. Jack Alfonso, Heat Twitter's man of mystery of the Miami Heat Beat podcast, sort of, and for one whole hour last week, my co-host on the show. How are you doing, Jack?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah? I mean, we had a, as you said, we had a good run there. You were hired and summarily fired just because, wow, we just don't tolerate any kind of moonlighting here at the Locked On Heat franchise.
It was a good run. My time at Locked On is, I'll always remember it. One of the best hours of my life, I think.
That's great. Really, look, I mean, really you're in all reality, you were kind of spreading yourself a little thin there between all the fictional podcasts and real ones that you claim to be a part of. I mean, that was, that's a lot to handle on your plate. I didn't want to put any added pressure. So I feel like I was doing you a favor by terminating your contract with us.
Yeah, it was a house of cards and it had to come tumbling down at some point.
And so, well, we are ostensibly here to talk about the Miami Heat, and it's not easy to kind of go through. I don't know how you're feeling about the whole season. I would imagine that you felt pretty confident and not just confident about the Heat's chances in the finals, but positive overall regarding the outcome of the season.
Yeah, it's hard not to feel positive about the outcome of the season. There's definitely some bittersweetness to the way it ended. Sure. You felt that they were talented enough to at least go seven, maybe push the Lakers to like the very end, but the injuries kind of, I don't know, for lack of a better word, sucked. But I think anything past the Celtics series was, that's way more than I expected from this season. They showed themselves to be at the top tier of the East. I think they were clearly the second best NBA team in the bubble. You know, they pushed the Lakers farther than any of the teams out West. And Bam showed himself to be a star when it counted. Goran was incredible. Hero was wonderfully impressive for a rookie. And I think across the board, it was a really impressive season. One of my favorite seasons to watch as a Heat fan.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, I made the argument that based on the lower expectations prior to the season, the fact that they were able to get as far as they were probably makes it their most successful season in franchise history. I mean, you can always say that the championships ultimately define success, but for me, considering how everything was so put together, how well everything worked on the floor, the chemistry in the locker room, all the different things we've seen, and of course, the adversity of trying to reform and challenge other teams in the bubble, and of course social justice issues impacting them, the kind of mental taxing of being in a bubble for as long as they were. I mean, so many different things, and for them to accomplish everything they were, an incredible season, and like I said, probably one of their best, if not their best in franchise history. But perhaps one of the players that really defined their postseason success is the player we'll be talking about today, and unfortunately he probably has the most questions regarding his future, none other than Goran Dragic. I mean, it's hard not to talk about the bubble and the success from this past season and to look at what Goran was able to accomplish as perhaps the brightest spot of all. I mean, you mentioned Hero, you mentioned Bam, but I think for Goran to be as stable a presence, a scorer, and everything else that he did, that was, I mean, to me, one of the best things about watching his performances early on in those first few series before the injury started really taking him out of his comfort zone. I just enjoyed watching Goran be so successful because I feel like he's been such a strong part of this team for so many years and he never gets his due.
Yeah, it was really absolutely one of the most special things as a fan of Goran's for so long, as somebody who's watched him and known that he came in to play on a contending team with Bosch and he never really got that chance. And he's been kind of stranded here on relatively mediocre teams, and he stepped up when it counted. Like, he kind of came out of nowhere for me. He wasn't starting at the beginning of the season. He was good all season, but he was playing at an all-star level for much of the playoffs before he got injured. And it felt a lot to me like that 2016 Dwayne Wade run, where it's, I don't know, like kind of him emptying whatever he had left in the tank and just propelling this team with his scoring and just kind of everything he does on the floor is really a special thing to watch. Yeah, I would put it up there with maybe the most impressive player all playoffs, him, Bam, and Jimmy, and everybody else I mentioned.
Did you think starting the season, did you think that it was his best role would be coming off the bench?
I'm personally very much not a big fan of what Kendrick Nunn does for this team.
Well, we'll save that for another episode. Yeah. As far as the bench role is concerned. Like,
I won't get deep into that, but because of that, I thought Goran was far and away their best point guard. So I always wanted him to be a closer. I did like them bringing him off the bench, kind of like having him start with the second unit. I liked that. But, you know, he's one of their five best players. He's one of their three best players. So that's, I guess, a Spoism. It doesn't matter who starts. It matters who closes.
Sure.
And, yeah, he's just a stable presence. I did like him as a sixth man, and I really wanted him to win sixth man of the year this year.
So
it's
did
a shame
I.
that he wasn't a finalist.
Yeah, I mean, compare – when you look at how badly the Clippers performed, and one of the reasons why was their lack of depth and the fact that Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams really could have outperformed Denver. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And, of course, then you think about that, and it's the fact, well, if they're both considered six men of the year candidates, how is that even possible? That's a whole other episode. Yeah. I don't even want to talk about that. That's just ridiculous. But, I mean, for Goran, like – I mean, he's talked about it, I think, a lot more now that the hiatus took place and, of course, reforming in the bubble. Like, he's been much more open than he was during the season about how difficult the transition was for him. And, I mean, again, I thought it was pretty clear that that was probably his best, you know, future or outcome as far as being able to preserve his career was coming off the bench. And this is, I mean, I listened to my exit interview from last year, and I had been talking about Goran all season long about him eventually coming off the bench. And this was before the trade for Jimmy and everything else. I thought Deion would start. I thought there would be a completely different backcourt than what we actually saw play out during the course of the season. But in any case, for Goran to come off the bench, to embrace it, he hasn't been shy about the reality hitting him as hard as it did. That, I mean, it was a challenge. At first he kind of said, no, I'll do whatever the team asked me to do. But then as the months went by, he was kind of like, no, that sucked. It really did suck for me to have to come off the bench. I took it. I did it because that's what Spo asked me to do, and I'd do anything for Spo. But the reality is I thrive as a starter. So, I mean, the fact that he had all this, I wouldn't say animosity necessarily, but the fact that he was clearly upset about the perceived emotion and that he was still able to play as well as he did throughout the regular season. I mean, his numbers were phenomenal. His scoring jumped up from last season's and just a slight uptick as far as his playing time is concerned. He was able to get to the line more effectively than he had throughout most of his career. Goran's 5.3 free throw attempts per 36 minutes last year was actually the third highest rate of his career. So that was pretty impressive considering that he no longer has that kind of burst that he once did. He was still not kind of, to me, I didn't see him throwing the iron shoulder as much nor drawing as much contact, but clearly was still, you know, able to get to the line pretty frequently. So just all these different factors, and he was shooting much more from the perimeter. I think the majority of his 3-point shots, 46.7% of his field goal attempts were 3-pointers. So that's incredible. Yeah, he's kind of just transformed his game to a guy who was relying so much on speed to get to the rim, to create space underneath the rim by, again, being a little physical and finishing at a high rate at the basket. And now he's kind of just stretched the floor out a little bit more. He's relying much more on a 3-point shot. It's, I think, a natural byproduct of his age, but everything that he's gone through, it's just, I don't know. I have been a long fan of Goran's, talking to him as much as I have and just seeing him evolve as a vocal leader in that locker room and embrace, as you said, all the different iterations of this team. It's been phenomenal to watch him thrive. And I think that's the biggest takeaway for me as far as a pro is concerned, just watching him embrace all the challenges and continue to find a way to produce and just be a really solid teammate.
Yeah, I mean, you said it with him kind of losing some burst from when he joined the team. But I mean, if you look at his numbers year by year and just, I mean, watch him play, watch his impact on the team, he's such a steady, consistent presence. No matter how he's getting his points, no matter how he's getting it done, he's getting it done at the same level. He might not be having like that all-star season, but he's still like, you got to deal with him every night. He's like an incredible leader for this team. And I mean, one of the great joys of this season and why this season, I think, is so close, why this team is so close to so many like fans' hearts is like the personalities that like, yeah. He's really come out of his shell with Jimmy, like the big face coffee stuff, all like,
yeah,
all just the friendliness and the camaraderie of this Heat team. And a lot of it is Goran, who is like just this incredible like pair with Jimmy, who's kind of had this reputation of butting heads with like other talented players on teams in the past. Like just how much this team has embraced each other has really been one of the cool things about watching them, how, and because of that, how low pressure I think they felt. Like there's low expectations, but also I think there was never a point where they didn't seem to enjoy playing together, even in high pressure situations.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I mean, you're right to bring up that friendship, because that was, I think, a big part of what made Jimmy's transition feel so seamless. I mean, clearly they had to work through some things over the course of the year. Although even still, I think just Goran's temperament and understanding, like he deferred to Dwayne a lot over the last couple seasons, even last year when Dwayne was no longer the player he once was. And so for him to kind of just understand how to fit alongside Jimmy, but to also push him. And look, like one of the things that is not spoken about nearly enough, I think, is Goran's competitive nature. Like clearly, he still has that drive to continue to thrive and be productive and things of that sort. And you know, kind of gets overlooked in all the narratives about him being a white European player. I mean, he never gets discussed amongst the upper elite of NBA players, but he's been very, very good for a long period of time. I feel like I could talk about Goran positively for many, many episodes. I probably already have done that too often for my listeners, but at the same time, it's just great to see him and to see him be, you know, such an impact player, to find somebody he could get along with, at least publicly, as much as he did with Jimmy. Just that friendship and everything we saw from the bubble. I mean, he gave so much to this team in order for them to succeed. And that's been incredible to watch. But unfortunately, there's a flip side to that where we have to discuss whether Goran's age and health will be an issue next year. And does he return to a bench role? We'll talk about that next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Now, Jack, I'm not sure what your schedule is like now, but as far as I'm concerned, every once in a while, I need something to kind of give me a burst to get me through the day. And Built Bar provides that kind of energy. But not only that, it's also the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. They've got 18 amazing flavors, including 6 new ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp. Of course, there are 12 original flavors, all of them delicious. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate, so they're soft and easy to chew. And of course, they're healthy and great for health conscious people. If you're looking to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat, the bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. And again, they've got all the nutrients that you're looking for. And best of all, if you go to builtbar.com right now and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order. So use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. Stay up to date on the latest roster changes, rumors, and more by subscribing to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. I'm here with Jack Alfonso, and we're talking about Goran Dragic. We went through the pros in the first segment, but now, unfortunately, we have to get into the cons and what happens with Goran next season, because it's going to be difficult to ascertain. He's 34 and a half years old, almost to the day. He's not getting any younger. He's getting significantly older, and he suffered, of course, a major injury that could impact his playing for the rest of his career. His turnover rate was a little bit higher than it normally is, 3.1 turnovers per 36 minutes, among the highest rate of his career. So I'm not sure how much of that you could attribute to playing alongside a relatively new cast of players, guys like Myers Leonard, Jimmy Butler, of course, Jay Crowder, Andre Iguodala, guys that, you know, he didn't really have much familiarity with over the last couple of seasons. And now to be able to have to play alongside them coming off the bench and again, bringing up a rookie in Tyler Hero, you know, all these new players that he had to surround himself. Well, maybe that's probably what led to some of those turnover numbers. But I think the biggest concerns, at least for me, is what happens with him due to the injury and his advancing age.
Yeah, absolutely. Even before the injury, watching that incredible playoff run, when I talked about him, it felt like, you know, he's 34. That's kind of the age where, you know, you're about to see some major decline. And we've talked in the last segment about how steady he's been. For me, that playoff run before the injury felt like this is the last we're going to see of Goran, like at this high level, at this like near all-star level. And you just think age is going to catch up to him at some point. You know, he's adjusted his game a lot where he's, you know, started shooting more. He's not as much of the attacker as he once was, but he still relies on speed plenty. And as his athleticism wanes, it's concerning to, I guess, see what he's going to be able to bring to a team going forward. And then you have the injury on top of all that, which is, I mean, that's the big question. You can talk about like a steady decline with age, like all you want, but that's not a minor injury. He can come back from it, but like foot problems, if they start nagging you, you know, that affects how you can drive at the rim and how you can do everything.
Now that I think about it, Tim Hardaway, he had plantar fascia issues throughout his late in his Heat tenure. And clearly his career started to take a downward turn. And then, you know, we remember him playing with the Pacers and playing with the Mavericks and Denver Nuggets for like, you know, a couple games here and there. He was never quite the same player he was as Miami when they were at their very best and competing for championships. So there's a history here. I wonder if the training staff knows all too well what happens next for them. Even prior to the injury, you know, maybe we could see that, again, as you brought up, that there was going to be some decline in his level of play. But I think he went through that evolution pretty steadfastly. Like, he seemed to adapt as well as you possibly can. I mean, in a way that Dwayne couldn't. Like, and maybe because we're talking about such a different level, a huge gap as far as the levels of athleticism are concerned, but Dwayne's reluctance to expand his range, to be much more of a conservative scorer, and those kinds of things, like Goran embraced that in a way that Dwayne did not. And maybe that's, you know, due to temperament, maybe that's due again to that huge gap in athleticism. But, you know, Goran was making the change, and then now it's going to be another transformation because he's going to have to come to a very harsh reality, have to reality check where he has to figure out what's next for him in his career. So I mean, there are concerns. The injury obviously is paramount. To me, I just don't know what to do with Goran. I'm kind of feeling like this is segueing already to that next segment where I want to talk about what the front office has to say. But what did you notice anything specific as far as Goran is concerned regarding his slippage in overall effectiveness or efficiency or anything like that maybe you think is worth pointing out?
I mean, you talked about the turnover rate being a bit higher, but I still think he was this really good player who got, you know, could kill you in so many ways. I think he's definitely not the athlete that he was he was this bulldog of a finisher when he first came to this team. He was so strong and like so fast. He's definitely not that anymore, but the shooting, you know, there was enough of an uptick with the shooting, I felt, where it compensated. He was aging really gracefully. He is aging really gracefully. It's just a concern when you reach, you know, your mid 30s. That's a point where, you know, not a lot of people get past like 35 and are continuing to play at that level. But no, I mean, he was incredible in the playoffs. He was pretty good all season. Like we said, he was like a sixth man of the year candidate. Yeah. I wouldn't say the decline has come yet. It just seems to be looming. And it seems like this injury might, you know, precipitate that maybe a little bit quicker.
So Kent, maybe that's the question then, given the fact that he's probably not going to be able to play at this higher level again, and that we've already seen somewhat of a transformation as far as how he tends to score because he's shooting so much more from the perimeter. Does he lean into that even more next season, in your opinion? Do you think he becomes much more of a just a spot up shooter, a catch and shoot guy, and rather than using his speed? I mean, we don't even know what's going to happen next season. Something we'll talk about in the next segment. But as far as, you know, what his offense is going to look like, I mean, his defense, I think we could always talk about that. I hate that kind of story. I know Johnny Navas is really big of pointing out how bad Goran's defense is. I kind of hate talking about that. I mean, I've heard him kind of expose Goran pretty badly, and the on-off numbers, all this crap. I hate that stuff. The reality is, to me, like, he's probably never been as bad as people always think he is, and he's not ever going to be that great anyway, but he's been solid enough. He does the job more often than not, in my opinion. Maybe the numbers bear otherwise, but the defense is one thing. As far as his scoring, and that's his impact, maybe that's the thing too, is that he has to lean into being much more one-dimensional. He's going to be a scorer almost completely. Does he just embrace the perimeter shooting? Can he get to a similar in shooting numbers where he's shooting close to 36% from three-point range, or maybe even higher?
I'll agree with you on the defensive talk. I definitely don't like getting on him about the defense, because I don't feel like it's a lack of effort, and I don't feel like it's a lack of knowledge. Like, I think definitely he plays smart and he plays hard.
Yeah.
And that's all you can ask for. He's not going to be like this incredible like defender just because of his, you know, physical limitations, but you know, he gives you what he can, and it's, I think, usually pretty good. I guess you can dive into the numbers and prove that wrong, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how he responds to the injury and to the age. You know, you mentioned that his three-point rate has gotten a lot higher. It depends on whether this injury is going to nag him a ton, I guess. It seems like one of those injuries that does kind of recur. Like, you mentioned the Hardaway thing, like, and if, you know, like, I think about like the Dwayne Wade with like the bone bruises and all that stuff, like where it was just kind of a thing that was always there. And it was always a question like every week. And that's kind of what I worry about with Goran is, you know, if all next year we're going to be asking, oh, how is his foot doing today? But yeah, I mean, he's a skilled shooter, and I think they have enough talent to make up for him not penetrating as much. Yeah. I think as Bam develops, he can kind of attack the rim more, hopefully. Jimmy's a pretty low usage guy relatively, and I don't want to put, I don't want him to be like a 30% usage rate guy, but like he could definitely up his usage a little bit and kind of take some of the reins there. And I think Hero's development as a penetrator like late in the season is pretty encouraging in terms of giving you something there. But yeah, I think he could take a step back gracefully in that regard, like that area of his game, and just become, you know, a shooter who, you know, gives you some good passing. And maybe he has some nights where his foot's feeling really good and he's feeling really fast.
Yeah.
And then he kind of looks like old Goran, kind of what we saw with like late Wade, where, you know, sometimes he summons that feeling.
Oh boy, I can't wait to hear John Crotty say classic Goran Dragic after every drive.
Vintage.
Every 4 months when he drives to the hoop, vintage Goran Dragic there. Yeah. So what's the front office's plan for Goran? We'll talk about that in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLHeat. So here we get to questions the front office might potentially ask in the midst of this exit interview. And to me, I don't think there's any other question that they could potentially ask other than, what do you want to do? Like, to me, like, he's earned so much because of what his performance was this season. The fact that he embraced that role coming off the bench, and now his injury changes everything. But of course, like, they have to give him some kind of flexibility to determine. I mean, we haven't even talked about the fact that he's a free agent. So, you know, I think there's probably already been some discussions. My feeling is, as many people have talked about before, that they'll probably offer him that 1 year deal with a sort of balloon payment just to kind of get him to stay with the team for another season in the hopes that the next season, when they go after their big whale in 2021, they can re-sign him to a more cap-friendly deal. I don't know. There has been so much talk over the last couple of seasons, a couple days, about, you know, what's going to happen this season. And the more I kind of think about this, I talked about this in my episode yesterday, like the finances of the league are going to be in such a terrible state. Like, I don't know that free agents are going to be able to generate and the kind of numbers they thought they would. They're not going to be able to get the kind of contracts they were hoping to get. The pandemic has changed so much of the reality of the NBA. And so now they're looking at, you know, the 40% escrow withholding that they're going to do from players is going to take such a big chunk out of their salaries that it might be the great equalizer and for a lot of players, in the sense that, you know, maybe they were hoping to get $10 million. Well, that $10 million is going to be closer to $1 million. And if that's the case, why not sign with a team like Miami? At least that's been my argument. But for Goran, I mean, I don't know. Does he choose going to another team in the hopes of getting much more stability? Is he just going to be a kind of guy who collects his paycheck and wraps it up? Because, I mean, who knows how effective he'll even be next season? What would you expect from him next year?
Well, I mean, I think I'm pretty confident that he's going to come back. I can't imagine that after the run they just had, given his relationship with the other guys on the team and given, you know, the Heat culture loyalty talk that you can either like accept or deny as like marketing or myth making. But, you know, Pat Riley does kind of make a big deal about taking care of his guys. I think they'll, you know, try really hard to get Goran back, regardless. Should they?
Should they though? I mean, it's like at this point, I mean, isn't that a legitimate question whether or not they should even bother trying to re-sign him, considering they don't know what he's going to be like next season? And the fact that they're going to be compressing 72 games into a relatively short amount of time, which is going to put even more strain on a 35-year-old body at that point, dealing with plantar fascia issues. Like, there's concerns there.
Yeah, that's the question. Not will they, should they? And I don't know. You can look at it a couple different ways. One, you don't want to break up a team that went six games in the NBA Finals, and like seems to have this really good chemistry. But two, I don't know. I think if you're looking at it purely about like what he can contribute to a roster, and like given this injury outlook, and you're not thinking of it from a human perspective at all, I would kind of say they're better off looking elsewhere if they're confident they can find a replacement for him at point guard. And I mean, personally, I've always wanted to see him go to Dallas and play with Luka for a little bit at the end of his career. I think that would be really cool to see the two Slovenians in the NBA together. But no, I think I err on the side of bringing him back just for sentimental reasons alone. Not that I don't think he's going to be a good player. I think he's such a hard worker that despite injuries, he's going to find a way to contribute and be effective. Whether it's just the smart basketball move and avoid, I think is yet to be seen. We still don't know how this injury is going to change the way he plays.
You brought up the point earlier, like the bubble may have shown us the very last memories that we'll have of Goran playing at this high a level. Would you say that there's a 0% chance that he's ever gets to that point next season? If he had to place odds on it.
I would not expect it. But I wouldn't put money against it happening, if that makes sense. Like I totally believe that he could do it. I was surprised by how good he was this year. Like, and if you asked me how I felt before the season or even before the playoffs about how I thought Goran was going to fare in the playoffs, like I didn't think he'd be this good. I didn't think he'd be their leading scorer. I didn't think he'd be like propelling them like into like the finals, like just based on his like leadership and his scoring and just his floor generaling alone. So I don't know. I'm kind of agnostic about it. I think it could go either way. He's been really good and he's aged gracefully all the time and he hasn't shown otherwise yet. the wild card is the injury and the age. It's hard to bet against a guy who has given you no reason to bet against him in his career.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I'm probably a lot more pessimistic about this than maybe most of Heat fans. I mean, I even just talking about it now, I don't think I even really gave it that much thought prior to us recording, because I think, like you, you kind of just always tend to accept, well, Goran's always found a way to come through, but I'm legitimately concerned that seems less likely to happen now. And I'd say if I had to put a, well, let's say best case scenario for him, at least in my opinion, is that he's probably at 60 to 70% of the player he once was, and kind of just continues to contribute more as a shooter off the bench. I don't think there's any chance of him starting. I think it would be detrimental to the team and to his health, and the expectations would push him in a way that he should not be pushed at this point. But the worst case scenario is that he's never back to the player that he was. And I think this is still realistic too. Like, I mean, he could get paid a lot of money next year for nothing. And even though he's not going to collect as much money, and this might be his last best chance at a realistic contract, he could just re-sign with the team for that, you know, 1 year deal. And he might have to seriously contemplate retirement after it's gone. I mean, after the season's done, because I don't know that he has much more playing time left. I would love to be greatly surprised. I would love to be shocked and see Goran return to not just full health, but to be productive and consistent, and just to be the kind of player he's been for the past 6 years. Like, to me, everybody talks about Hardaway. I think there's a lot of myth-making and romanticizing about what Hardaway did during that 90s era of brutal basketball. Goran, to me, is the best point guard in Miami Heat history. I don't think it's particularly close. I think their styles are different, but I think Goran has been very, very good for a long period of time. And because he's white, because he's European, because those teams were somewhat mediocre, he kind of gets disregarded. But that's a whole other conversation. So it's unfortunate to have to consider that. But the reality is that I think we're probably looking at the start of his last season of basketball, because I just don't see that there's a chance of him being back to the player he was and being as competitive as he is. I don't think he's just going to be a keep cashing them checks kind of guy. And so I think he's probably going to look at this season as his own very, very quiet last dance, which really, really sucks, but kind of leads me to where our next segment here. I don't know if and my listeners don't follow Jack religiously on Twitter, and they probably don't. He is a huge Bob Dylan fan. And so I asked him to have a comparison for each player that he talks about during these exit interviews with a Bob Dylan song. Of course, a huge discography there. You could choose from probably a dozen songs that fit best. But Jack, what was your song to describe your feelings for Goran Dragic?
Yeah, I kind of, like you said, there's a huge discography. There's a lot of different things to choose from, different moods to kind of express. I picked You're Gonna Make Me Lonesome When You Go from Blood on the Tracks. It's a great song from a great Bob Dylan album, but I chose it for kind of all the reasons we were talking about. Like, just I think he kind of snuck up on me personally, and I think he snuck up on a lot of Heat fans as a fan favorite, as a guy who has been such a steady presence for this team, such an awesome presence for this team. Especially in years where the team hasn't been all that fun, he's been like this shining light. So that's part of why I chose the song, that like affection for this player kind of sneaks up on you. But also, it seems like we're looking at the beginning of the end, whether next year is his last season or whether it's like, you know, the beginning of like kind of his tapering down. You're kind of reckoning with his own, the mortality of his career, like the end of his career. And I don't know, I've grown so fond of him as a player, and you know, he's been such a consistent presence across the board in the last half decade for Heat teams, that it's going to be weird when the Heat finally do move on from him, whether by free agency or retirement, or just like him getting a diminished role on the bench. It's going to be eerie to see a new point guard take the reins, and I'm not super excited about it. So, you know, it's going to make me lonesome when Goran goes.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I was just thinking about it even as you're talking about it. And it was a beautiful tweet that was recently posted of him, like, helping his son fly a kite by the Slovenian countryside. Did you see that?
Did not see that. That sounds delightful.
Delightful and terrible. Again, when he's a week or two after the bubble ended and, you know, obviously the injury situation and him fighting through it and everything else, and he's kind of retired to Slovenian country life already. But in the same way, I kind of took some solace from that, because one of the things that has always... it's always been an issue that I've been particularly keen on is how players age and how they embrace that age and how it impacts them so negatively, because so often they don't see it coming and they're not prepared for it one way or the other. Goran, conversely, I think is going to be ready to embrace family life. He has spoken about how happy he was being able to spend that time with his wife and kids while they were waiting during the hiatus, and then, you know, how much that he missed having them there. That as long, he said the one thing he needed to bring with him into the bubble was, you know, his phone or a tablet, just so he could FaceTime the kids and his wife. And that's like fantastic, because that's, to me, that's the nature of who Goran is. He's just a really good family man. And I think he's going to be prepared for stepping away from basketball, but he's going to be the most competitive soccer dad ever. Like, he's going to go and curse whatever his kids play. I'm sure it's probably going to be basketball and or soccer, given the fact that he's Slovenian and loves both as much as he does. But whatever sport they play, he's going to be such a competitive son of a bitch. I can't see him totally getting into a fight with dads and referees and having to cool off and things of that sort, because he's just so fiery. And he loves his family so much that it's just amazing to kind of picture what he'll be like in retirement. But unfortunately, seems like that's going to be, at least to me, a lot sooner than we'd like. But thank you so much for taking the time to kind of break down Goran's year. Hopefully you'll be able to stick around and come back at another time and do another exit interview with us. And thanks so much. Why don't you tell my listeners where they can follow you on Twitter for not just Bob Dylan related tweets, but lots of good tweets.
Yeah, I don't know if I could recommend you following me on Twitter, but if you want to, it's at Alfonso Hoops on Twitter. Sometimes I'm on some other Heat podcasts that aren't as good as Locked On, but
of course not. That goes without saying.
But if you've listened to all the Locked On episodes twice and you want to venture to a different one, you can hear my voice there.
That is great. I love it. Fantastic marketing. You've done a great job there. But do absolutely check out Jack on Twitter. It's not just about basketball, even though I just realized now Alfonso Hoops, basketball probably represents like 10% of what you tweet about, you know?
Yeah, probably still, for better or for worse.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's great. You get a really good, diverse kind of broad section of, a cross section rather, of tweets there. I really like it. So, and anyway, thanks again for coming on. And of course, to all of you, I'll continue bringing you the latest rumors and news from around the NBA and looking ahead to the NBA draft, which is just right around the corner. If you want to stay up to date with that, what better way to do that than by subscribing and following this podcast? I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you as always for your support.